everybody.
Check, check one, two, check.
Hello. All right, everybody. Welcome to Hacking 101. We're still missing people, but we're just going to kick it off because this winds up being fairly free form anyway as we just kick it around from person to person on the panel, and usually it winds up being the audience that drives what we talk about because we kind of like these to be a discussion.
Which means we have absolutely no preparation. That's really what that's all about.
Yeah, and this started, I think, 10 years ago. It was either 10 or 11 years now that I was on the first panel when we did one of these.
6 years before I started.
Which I can't remember if it was 10 or 11 years. I mean, it's Dragon Con time. So
11, somebody says. All 11? The way to 11.
All right. The way 11. We are all the way to 11.
This one cranks.
Okay.
It really rocks, man.
One of the things about this talk is it's wound up becoming like a state of the union for the hacking community, or at least the Southeastern hacking community, or it has been at points in time. Because like when we first started giving these talks, anybody who self-identified as a hacker had a lot of problems, government law enforcement officials who didn't actually understand what hacking was, to employers who didn't understand what hacking was, and it was a very hard thing to self-identify as a hacker and say, this is what it is, this is what we do. Hacking is not about breaking into things. It's not about breaking laws. It's about exploration of technology, using technology to improve people's lives, and self-education. And we always started coming just basically talking about that this is about self-education, community, and figuring out how to control technology rather than having it control us.
Let's just start by introducing ourselves, I think.
Yeah, we probably should.
Yeah, good plan.
So here, Randall.
Hi, I'm Randall Schwartz. If you've seen Learning Perl, you've seen some of my work. I've written and contributed to the top 10 books on Perl and 254 magazine articles on Perl. And if you add up all the bylines on that, I've been in print about 27 million times, literally. Of course, if that was one single book, it'd be like one of the New York Times top 10 bestsellers, but unfortunately it was all spread out over a 15-year period. I've also run into trouble with the law, which is actually how I got here a few years ago, talking about my story. Of course, since 2 years ago, I had my felonies all expunged, so I'm actually a clean slate once again, which is really nice, if you hadn't heard the story from last year. And I've been to Canada finally. Nice thing, yeah. I can actually cross the line with no issues whatsoever. And I've been working with computers one way or the other professionally since 1977, so I have a bit of history there. I wrote my first program in 1969, I believe, 68, 69, right in there. It was about 150 lines long, and it had zero bugs. So I've only gone downhill since. It was a simple program written in BASIC that you press 1 for add, 2 for subtract, 3 for multiply, 4 for divide, then would read two numbers in and then do whatever it has to do. And that was the very first program. I wrote it entirely on paper, typed it in, and it ran.
And
BASIC, yeah.
And I should point out that I actually got good at coding Perl by reading this man's books. I had coded Perl previously, but I actually started to get good when I was reading your books.
Thanks.
I still thank you for that. My salary thanks you for that.
Mm. If only I got 10% of everybody that read my book.
All right.
Have to work.
So my name is Nick LeVay, otherwise known as Rattle, and currently I run operations and information security at the Center for American Progress, a think tank in Washington, D.C. I've done a lot of work with internet service providers, both domestically and overseas. I worked as a security consultant on and off for at least 12 years now. Do some consulting for everything from private organizations to governmental agencies. And I guess that's the simple background on me. And we're still missing our normal master of ceremonies, Johnny X here.
Because we're just the slaves of ceremonies.
Yeah, we're still just going to bitch about him not being here, though. Yeah, and in fact, we should talk about this. I was saying when we started that there's a kind of a long tradition here that we've been doing this for about 10 years, and this is usually kind of the introductory session to a larger party, and I swear the party this year is going to be huge. Now, we do Hacking 101, which is this talk, and we do Hacking 201 tomorrow night, and Hacking 201 is a kind of purely Q&A-based thing. But the one thing that we do after this talk is we take a major little fundraising thing, and we take every cent that goes into this, and we put it into booze. I mean,
pizza.
It's one of the most legendary beer runs that is in DragonCon history every single year.
And requires severe stealth to get it into the
We tend to walk out of here with somewhere in the neighborhood of $300 in this thing, and we come back with a pallet of booze, and we bring it to Hacking 201.
One bottle of Macallan 25.
And you, if you ask a good question, you get a good beer. If you ask a crappy question, you get a crappy beer.
And in other words, an American beer.
And this year it's going to be very interesting because we always try to take Hacking 201 and turn it into something that's a larger set of events through the chain of the night. And this year it's working out really well for us because we have the Mad Scientist Ball at the Hyatt.
Just one ball.
The big Regency Regency 5. We're going to have the singing Tesla coil people back. Some of you might have been here last year, remember them highly from when we had the room across the way, where we had them in there. Now, these things are really awesome to watch. It's two Tesla coils, and they play music, and it's all like MIDI sequenced, and they sound kind of like FM synthesis, very 8-bitty. It's something to behold. So we're going to be running a ball in that room pretty much the entire night, and we're going to take Hacking 201 and pretty much feed it into that. So I got to say, I'm at a little bit of a loss for which way we should send this talk this year. As Drew comes in.
That was his cue.
Because...
All right, facing guys, Brack, and staff, where are you? Raise your hand. All right. Okay, I need one of you working in the space room, and someone's got to go help Lorraine. Who's going to bite the bullet, and who's going to get the first drinks for Hacking 201 by doing so? Mm. Oh, come on. You're all fucking alcoholics.
Okay. So... In past years,
Okay. We need a guy.
DQ'd.
Okay.
By the way, we've got a few free chairs up here if you'd like to sit down. We've got a few free chairs.
Because the rest of them are expensive.
Lorraine! Lorraine!
What?
You need anything else?
Yeah, get back here already.
There are some chairs up here. If you're standing in the back, there are, I see, six empty chairs.
If you're sitting next to an empty chair, raise your hand.
If you're not sitting next to an empty chair, lower your hand. Let's just make it really complex. If you only have an empty chair on one side of you, raise that one hand. We'll still add a couple over here, one up here. Fill up. Come on, we don't bite. We're behind a protective barrier up here. Don't worry. We need that for isolation.
Okay, so I think to get things on track, as I was saying, I'm a little lost of the way we direct the talk this year, because in past years we've talked about things about how hackers needed to get in better positions in government, media, and politics and whatever, and that should be our thrust, so we could attack security problems from the inside. Well, we're pretty much there these days. So I think one of the things we should probably do is
first introduce
him. Some of the
my job. Puba.
Do I really need an introduction?
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Unless you want us to worship you.
Well, what's wrong with that? All right. I'm Drew Myers, a.k.a. Johnny X, a.k.a. Pope Johnny X, a.k.a. the Reverend Dr. Johnny Anonymous, a.k.a. Hey You Asshole, and I helped start this track of programming with this miscreant right here, I guess, what,
11 years ago, we just
Jesus
figured
Christ,
that
we're getting fucking old, man. why we're not in jail or dead, I don't know, because we've pulled some really stupid stuff over the years. DragonCon's fun. We started out Well, he's a Jersey guy, but he came down to Nashville for reasons that still I can't
boggle my mind.
Yeah. He doesn't even know why. We were part of the Nashville 2600 scene there, and it was kind of weird back in the early 90s because we were pretty much it, south of Chicago and north of Miami and west of D.C. We had people at the height of our monthly 2600 meetings coming in from out of state. We would have 30, 40 people? What was the
largest
minimum?
Win? Yeah, and usually half. I think the figure we used is half of the people came more than 100 miles to get there.
Yeah. How many people do not know what a monthly 2600 meeting is? Raise your hand. Okay. all right. First thing you got to do, go to... Wait a minute. You don't know? You're dating him and you don't know? Okay. Well, you're falling down on your duty.
Well, 2600 Magazine... 2600 Magazine published a set of meeting guidelines years ago, and they were basically simple guidelines, like it should be a public place, everybody should be invited, nobody should, you know, be excluded kind of guidelines about hacker meetings once a month, first Friday of the month.
Who doesn't know what 2600 is? Oh, okay.
Yeah, somewhere manual.
Okay.
Just
well, you guys come up with us afterwards, and we'll explain it because there's a few enough of you.
And Drew is right. The Nashville meetings, a lot started out of that. Like we kind of got this idea that we should start to unify the Southeast hacking scene, and we just did simple things like set up mailing lists and encourage people to plan things that span different cities. And over the period of what, about 2 years,
Hang on, we wound up blackmail material.
Over the course of about 2 years, we managed to get Freaknik, which is actually the second longest continuous running HackerCon in the United States.
Can I diverge for just
it's
a moment
still
here?
Running.
Okay, how many of you Atlanta natives here are Freaknik with an F? Yeah, how many of you? Okay. When we started Freaknik with a PH, we were thinking phone freaking and Nick is a network interface card. We were a bunch of, you know, white guy and Asian computer geeks in Nashville who did not know about Freaknik with an F here in Atlanta. I swear to God, when we chose that name, we didn't know. And I was really, really worried about... you know, them suing us possibly, or a lot of really angry guys who came up coming up to Nashville to party and discovering a bunch of computer geeks. So I wanted to make sure that didn't happen. I contacted them and said basically what I've just said. We didn't know. We're geeks. We didn't know. Is it cool? We can put a link on our website to yours. And they're like, let's exchange T-shirts. That's kind of cool. So, yeah, there we go.
Hey, I never got a Freaknik T-shirt from the one down here.
You didn't get a Freaknik with an F T-shirt?
No, I never did.
You know what happened to mine?
What?
Fucking bitch Laura Yu ran off with it.
Ex-fiance.
Aww.
He's still bitter.
Well, not as much as I used to be. The medication helps.
Is there any surprise it's an ex?
Okay, so where were
yeah,
we?
Yeah, so hey, well, we should encourage people, if you like spending a weekend around a bunch of hacker geeks working on neat projects and drinking excessively, Freaknik is a very very good conduit.
I went to two of them, I think. Was it two
yeah,
of them?
Yeah, I'm sure the other Freaknik is fun. I guess just... You know, you're just going to have trouble finding people to talk to about, like, FPGAs and stuff.
Yeah, I was kind of the guy who ran, didn't do it by myself, of course. It's not a solo effort. It takes a group of people who are dedicated and help out a lot. So when I say I ran Freaknik for the first 5 years, what I mean is I was the schmuck who was dumb enough to put my name on all
the
of the
most
legal
likely
documents
to get
and paperwork.
Sued.
Yes, that was me. I ran it for the first 5 years, and it was pretty much a donation con. We had... one of these babies set up, and...
Yeah, we didn't even charge admission.
Yeah, if you wanted the badge and the program booklet and stuff like that, you know, we requested donation. If you just wanted to come and sit on panels during the day or hang out with the National Linux Users Group and learn how to use Linux over the course of a weekend, hey, no problem. Go for it. They do charge, was it now, $15, $20?
Yeah.
Just because it's grown and it's in a much nicer place. I admit it.
And you can also write it off your taxes because they run it as a 501c3 now. So
yeah. When we started really growing and getting up around 300-400 people, I looked for a really kind of shitty hotel to move it into, one that was kind of desperate for business because I figured any damage that we did wouldn't be noticed. And that worked like a charm for 2 years, and they were really desperate for business. I'm sorry the place got condemned and is no longer... existence.
Yeah, it started off at the Drury, and then we were at the Days Inn, and
which no longer exists. Oh God, with the Days Inn is out by the Nashville International Airport.
That was crazy.
And we had to put a warning in the program booklet that says, please do not with lasers incoming air traffic.
Yeah. In fact,
the FCC has FAA has no sense of humor about that.
Having it right by the airport wasn't the greatest of ideas. We accidentally, and I mean accidentally, honestly, took out their radar one night. Some guys are out with a, I think it was a Tesla coil.
It was a Tesla coil. Those damn Tesla coils.
And normally.
Oh, by the way, I got a pipe. Architect, the singing Tesla coil guys. This is the actual circuit diagram for the singing Tesla coil. So come to the Mad Scientist Ball tomorrow, get a t-shirt, and build your own damn Tesla coil. This is also financing their trip, by the way. DragonCon's not paying them a cent to come out here or to stay. They're paying for it all with t-shirts. But t-shirt sales have been very good. But, yeah, they don't want to take any back with them. Say again?
Yeah, it's in the, you know when you go right up in the Hyatt, the smoking area at the top of the stairs? Mm-hmm. Well, like, if you go through the doors there and just kind of hang, like, left, immediately left, it's going to be there. And when it's going
Hyatt
on,
Regency
you're not
5
able
ballroom,
to miss
tomorrow
it
night at 10 o'clock
back,
is when it starts, and we go until the cops or the fire marshal shut us down.
Yeah, and we're actually making sure the fire marshal weren't. We're
let me
sure
get this part over with
first.
Early. Those of you who have been attending Hacking 101 know that this is a tradition. This is the beer fund for Hacking 201, because those of you from out of state, you may not realize it, you can't buy alcohol on Sunday. So if you want to drink tomorrow night, buy today. And alcohol sales stop at midnight. We take up a collection for tomorrow night's beer fund. To keep everything honest, we count it out here at, after the panel's over with. Anybody who wants to stay, we
and
count
frankly,
the
And frankly, if you want to help with the beer run,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, we take volunteers. Yeah, we take volunteers. We count it out in front of everybody so everyone knows the total. We bring receipts back and we show them to anyone who wants to see them for Hacking 201. No one's going to get away with your money and spend it on My Pretty Ponies in the vendor's room or anything. So, okay, I'm done. You talk to Snail.
Okay, so now let's get to the bottom of it. Let's talk about LOL Cats.
Wait, one more about Freaknik. This was another bad thing about being out by the airport. We had a video projector out there, and it started out innocently enough because there was a three-story exterior wall on the hotel that we were originally playing video games against, and then the porn came out. And, well, was
all
that
the
you?
People
Telco
flying
Bob, that
in.
Was you? I always wondered who it was. Okay, yeah. All right. Telco Bob. Give him a hand. What? And the thing was, the hotel was right next to the main landing strip. So people are coming into Nashville, and they look out their windows. There's three-story high Goatsy on the hotel right next to the airport police came over and told us to stop. That wasn't the last time they came over.
Wait,
either.
How many times did we actually, that con, I think we had more law enforcement personnel respond to than any other con. We had the FCC come out to figure out why the radar stopped working.
I mean, that was an honest mistake. We didn't mean to do that.
We
cut the Tesla coil off immediately. Sorry.
When the Fed showed up, they were actually very, very cool about it. They came to the back, they saw the Tesla coil, and I remember exactly what the lead guy says, oh my God, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
At that point,
we've got to turn it off right now.
Yeah. At that point, we knew we weren't going to get arrested, and so when we were certain everything was cool, blah blah blah, that's when we started getting them drunk. So yeah. If the law shows up and they're laughing and smiling and
we've done our jobs,
then you're pretty much safe. So yeah. Okay,
so,
I'm done. For now.
Okay, so what's something that's actually a hacking issue that we can throw out here for discussion?
Let the crowd?
Yeah. Somebody, whoever's the most ambitious, stand up and tell us what you think is the biggest issue in computer security today.
Wow.
Well, this is 101. Maybe we're too narrowly targeted because, I have a much wider, broader definition of hacking than
who's got
you guys
a project
do,
they've been working on
do.
That they're really proud of that they want to talk about?
Telco Bob, come down here and be entertaining.
Oh yeah, Telco Bob. I know exactly
are you
gonna
what do
you're
the back
talk about. Tell everybody. What
are you going to do the backpack thing and disrupt the drum circle again?
If my other guy gets here, I can't do it without the other guy.
Radio transmitter and a couple of boom boxes, and they go in usually playing Parliament in the middle of the drum circle and dance around in different beats than the drum circle people do until they get thrown out.
And then we go to the elevators.
Okay, tell them about what you're working on, because this is a good example of one of the things that's been going on in the hacking community lately is a lot of people are actually building hacking spaces, workspaces, spaces you can go and work on projects. The Nashville people are doing it. Out in D.C., we've got one. Telco.
Well, get Kerbob up here too, then.
Put the shit in that space.
No, that's the old one. This is the new one. This is Telco Bob's vision.
For those of you who are kind of new to the hacking scene, if you haven't figured it out, a lot of us can, a lot of us are OCD, and we kind of like talk all around and on top of each other and drift off topic and go back and forth, and the description herding cats is like very accurate as far as trying to get a group of hackers to do anything, which you're witnessing it right now.
Why would you want to herd a cat?
Why not?
Oh, herd a cat. Okay.
I don't know.
No, not herding cats. No. God.
I don't know.
Herding.
If I could command like 100 cats to do my will at any given time.
You'd rule the world, my friend.
Cool.
All I want is my F12 cats, key so to stop printing out the word anal.
Stop.
What OS are you running?
That would be Goatsy OS.
Which, here,
it's a Slackware offshoot.
We have a question.
Hacking 101. Can you please define the difference between computer programming and hacking?
I don't really think there is
okay.
much.
Okay, there isn't a big, deep, fundamental one, but one of the distinction I'd say is most of the people that self-identify themselves as hackers tend to be mostly self-taught. So one of the themes that runs through hacking is self-education and actual exploration of problems and figuring out how to figure it out yourself and then tell somebody else about it. So that is one of the things that kind of distinguishes hacking, not so much from programming as much as from academia, even though the two are totally compatible with each other.
It's really more of a cultural
difference. Like, if you're familiar with open source software and a lot of the ideals and philosophies behind open source software, that's where a lot of the overlap occurs from hacking, because essentially that community is where that got pulled from. It's not purely a computer security thing.
And may I say, if you're not familiar with open source software, I produce a podcast called Floss Weekly. How many people here have heard Floss Weekly? Thank you. Please tell your friends. Floss Weekly is produced through Leo Laporte's Twit organization. It's getting about 80,000 downloads a week right now. I'm very proud of it. We've interviewed some very, very cool people. Like, we just did a show on the guy that did Asterisk, Mark Spencer. And the week before, we were talking to... actually, coming up next week is Audacity, the guy that wrote Audacity. So
Freaknik was the first con that he did.
So it's a great show. You can find it by just Googling for Floss Weekly. Floss stands for Free Libre Open Source Software, FLOSS. And so check that show out. It's actually weekly, finally, again. It was dead for a while.
I'm just upset I have nothing up here to plug.
Twisted Pair.
The what?
I haven't been
paying attention to that. I'm like in the DC bubble right now, where it's like very hard for me to do anything other than like when I'm at work or when I'm at home trying not to be at work.
I'm part of the Atlanta group.
Talk to me about it some later. I've been showing up to Hack DC, some of the Hack DC events, but yeah. Yeah.
I'm starting a project and a website for anyone that's into Cisco security training. Cisco security router switches and everything where you can remote connect into them and work on them.
Cisco the food service?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. Okay.
No,
yes. The other Cisco.
All right.
Same thing.
So, like, kind of like the stuff you have access to if you have all the Cisco certs for the labs, only it's with glued people.
Yeah, certs with Cisco.
You're gonna, set up a radio server.
If possible, I would strongly suggest that you also do some Juniper Olive boxes. If you've got legitimate access to the Juno S, you can run that stuff on commodity x86 hardware. And P3 computer, basically, with 128 mega RAM. You can go down that low on the stats. It's running the software for Juniper routers on top of FreeBSD, and it will route traffic. So you can build a very inexpensive Juniper lab with throwaway PCs. And having worked on Cisco and Juniper both, oh God, Juniper blows Cisco away. It's based on FreeBSD. I'm a big Juniper evangelist, and any of you routing and networking people, I strongly recommend getting into Juniper if you possibly can. It's so much easier to work on that stuff than
it's
Cisco, and it's a hell of a lot more secure.
Too. I just started using their management systems
For
like their firewalls
talk
last
about that
year, like the NSM stuff where you can manage like multiple net screens and everything. And I gotta say, just with the management software layer, there's like one head headcount on my team I don't need.
Let me give you another real good reason to focus on Juniper if you want security. Mike Lynn, who knows who Mike Lynn is? Cisco Mike, the guy who did the Holy Grail remote code execution on a Cisco router. He demonstrated it live at Black Hat in 2005. And basically, Cisco sued, and Juniper paid his legal bills, if I remember correctly. And he now works for Juniper, and he's one of their lead engineers, and he's gone through their code line by line to make sure that they're secure. This is the guy who broke the stuff that Cisco said could never be broken. So, yeah. Juniper, J-U-N-I-P-E-R.
You know, the other big router company. So, speaking of Black Hat, the con that I hate... And you should go to ShmooCon instead.
$3,000.
Well, you're paying $3,000 for Black Hat. But Bruce Potter and I were having a conversation about how the computer security people have kind of usurped the hacker community. And there's really more to hacking than just computer security. It's also about learning anything in an unconventional manner. So, you know, there's lock picking.
How many people read Make Magazine? How many people actually build stuff from Make Magazine? How many people have been inspired to build things not described in Make Magazine? All right, there you go.
Yeah, and you know, I don't really have a problem with the usurpation or the professionalization of the security community, because the security, the people who call the, or call themselves security professionals tend to also be the people who understand, oh yeah, there's people within the space that are hackers too. It used to be actually a big problem where if you self-identified as a hacker, nobody wanted to touch you in the professional realm. And I mean, I still hear horror stories every so often about that, but fairly infrequently the past few years. It's just not that big of a problem.
I still love you anyway.
Mm. And of course, there's the whole social engineering aspect. That's a whole lot of fun.
And the legal aspect. A lot of people in the security and hacking community, some of the only people I know who've dived out of it have dived out of it to get law degrees. We've had a few of those. Chris Cunningham, somebody who sat on this panel before, he's now hacking tax code.
I would almost say that President Bush is probably the biggest hacker I've ever seen in my entire life.
No,
I have
he's
never
a dipshit.
No, seriously, I have never seen anyone hack the Constitution as much as much as him.
I don't know. You got to give the credit to Addison for that one.
No, that was Alito, I thought.
Shredding
no,
is
Addison. It wasn't Alito. It was Alito. Addison.
Shredding, just shredding. That's
Cheney's
all I've
lawyer.
Seen. Deleting. It was all just holding down the delete key, not much hacking.
Just that F12 key.
So yeah, having a being in the IT community for a while, if you decide to leave, there are a whole bunch of other places you can go. You talked about legal stuff, and if you don't want to be evil,
7-Eleven.
I'm kind of I've been doing this on off for about 15 years. I think I've had enough. I'm going back to school and going into genetics. So.
I think,
and you know, you'll
the
be
most
very
common
proud of
path
this.
Is probably
most
rehab.
Of the gene sequencing stuff really, really, really makes use of Perl.
Oh, I know that.
So, okay, yeah,
I know that. Yes.
Yeah.
In fact,
geneticists love Perl.
A lot of it is. You got to do something with those skills. Right?
A lot of it is Lincolnstein's work, and Lincolnstein has both a medical doctor and a computer PhD, one of the rare combo.
Wow.
And he wrote CGIPM.
Wow.
So he spends all day writing CGI stuff, even though it's all about getting the Human Genome Project to work. Yeah.
Great stuff.
It's good stuff.
Interesting.
Wide open field. If anyone's planning on doing that, wants to make a career change, computational epigenetics will put both your computer skills to use, and you'll have a big jump on people just going into the field because you've got the IT skills, and it's quite widely used. You're modeling genetic changes and what happens when you switch different genes on and off and how they work together and don't work together.
Johnny, do you know the song Clone of My Own? It's an old Filk song.
Oh, sing it for us.
I only remember the chorus. Clone of my own, with a Y chromosome changed to an X. And this will be just like me, and she'll think of nothing but sex.
Please stop giving the audience auditory cancer.
Yes.
Please.
I wish I had the rest of the words, but it's an old Filk song.
They're recording this.
Yes, I know.
Oh, yeah.
It's all good.
Questions from the audience.
Yeah, that'll be good. Questions from stop us
well,
from
we'll
talking.
We'll just talk forever.
Oh,
go
over
for
here.
It.
I see.
Why did you turn off the Wi-Fi?
Huh?
Why did we turn off
Nick?
The Wi-Fi?
No, here.
Oh, that wasn't turned off.
I didn't have anything to do with that.
It wasn't working earlier. It wasn't working earlier.
Wasn't me.
It was working earlier.
Oh, really? It wasn't working for me.
Well, then I don't know. That thing there that looks like it's doing Wi-Fi.
If you've got T-Mobile, you can get out through the Kinko's connection. The setup they have here, we tried everything we could last year to figure out how to get around it. Basically, they're filtering by MAC address. And
I would do ARP cache poisoning if I were you.
Yeah, I think DNS tunneling winds up working on just about every Wi-Fi captive gateway setup I've ever seen.
If I did such things.
But it's slow as balls. I mean, it always works because, you know, they rarely have a DNS server.
Yeah, if you want to give us money, don't hesitate to come on up here and drop it in the bucket.
The more you donate, the
I'm
more
wearing
questions
a thong. You can. Oh,
thank you, yeah, sir. The more you donate, the drunker you get tomorrow.
That was so not glamorous.
The more you donate, the drunker I get.
Yeah, just because. Just remember, blue laws here suck.
I'll have a blue.
No, I shouldn't try living in Atlanta.
All right, we got a question there and a question there.
Okay. Let's take something.
There are always power tripping 14-year-olds who
and
get off on kicking
where?
People off.
Do
on
I look
seat?
Like a motherfucking frat boy?
No,
I'm just gonna stand up real quick. Take a look. I'm wearing a purple and yellow shirt, and I'm not raping a mentally retarded girl.
Or a sheep.
Okay, I actually
how to make a spur posse joke.
I actually wanted to just
you'll
say
Google that later.
I
be hilarious.
Personally blame the wares community. Because winds up being this, information should be free, knowledge should be free. I kind of wish knowledge should be free was the key thing. Not that
thank
I have
you,
anything
sir.
Against wares.
Thank you.
But
thank
the
you.
Wares community, ultra exclusive, very low skills, very low barrier for entry, but very exclusive because you either have it or you don't. And I've always kind of noticed that particular exclusionary thing always seems to come from like fringe parts of the community that usually have to do with just music and software piracy. And it's kind of funny because music and software piracy has never been hard. Okay.
It's brainless. Just you push buttons.
You know, figuring out how to put a jet in the back of your car is hard.
Yeah.
Figuring out how to do just about any complex computer problem is fairly hard. Sitting in IRC channels and gaining reputation with people so you can get your wares faster isn't really that hard. And I've always noticed the exclusionary end tends to come from that. There's some hacking cons you'll be at where there are all kinds of private parties and whatnot where they don't necessarily just want people coming in. And, you know, so there's that kind of exclusionary thing. But when it comes to sitting at the table of knowledge and sharing information, in my experience, most of the hacking community is about as open as you can get, especially because all the points that we've coordinated around have kind of enforced that. Like you talked about the 2600 meeting thing, totally enforced that openness. If you weren't trying to share information, you shouldn't go there. It's not just the taking of information.
I think also, you know, there's the people that know how to use a skeleton key that can open up any door in the building, and there's people that know how to make those skeleton keys. And maybe from the outside, they look like the same kind of people, but from the inside, we definitely know the difference.
Right, and more importantly, you know, you look at just to continue what Rattle was saying, you know, writing a Turing complete language, that's hard, right? Sitting around doing that on a weekend, that's some tough stuff with your friends. And that kind of thing tends to be a little lower key because we're not creating a language and then smothering our name all over it and selling it all over the internet. So,
are you
unfortunately,
implying anything? What is it?
No, not at all. So,
careful.
Me imply anything? Never.
Okay.
always. But what typically happens is that's the public facade. That's the thing that people see. It's the most visible because when you're looking for an illegal copy of Adobe Photoshop and you download it and that website is smothered with this, you know, Script Kiddie Whereas Group logo, that's what you see as the face of hacking. And really, there's a whole huge, deep community behind that.
That's what the media sees, too. That
right.
tends to sell advertising space better. So this gentleman here had a question. I think we've answered yours, have we?
Or maybe not.
Well, we can go into detail later on, outside, after the panel.
It was a Joe Biden answer, I know.
Just one thing I want to make sure doesn't fall through the cracks. Tell them about where you're trying to get
good
going
laugh.
In Raleigh.
Okay. Well, so, thanks, Al.
Now you have hepatitis.
Don't make me have to break out the cattle prod, dude.
So in Raleigh, we have a fairly large group for a 2600 meeting. I'd say at the most, we get like, what, 30 people at the most?
Yeah, yeah. It vacillates. It depends on, you know, people due to their availability, but our meetings are anywhere from 14 to 30 people per meeting. And we only have one every month. We've tried to get together for hacker cigar smoking, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But anywhere from 14 to 30 people, which is a pretty large group for 2600.
So that's where I come in. Once a month just wasn't good for me. Because when I'm at work, I'm doing work. When I'm at home, I'm probably sleeping. So there wasn't much room for projects. So I decided I was going to try to get a bunch of people together and start doing shit. Just anything. Hanging out, going out to dinner and stuff like that. And I started thinking, Nick Farr in D.C. and Sky Dog in Nashville. And all these people are starting these hacker labs, hacker spaces. And I thought that'd be a really damn good idea. Because I definitely don't have access or funds to get a lot of this neat shit like Mr. Stroger over here has. Mr. Rich motherfucker. So what we're doing now is just getting a bunch of people together, looking for space, and just saying, let's get out and do things instead of... just sit around
talk about and doing things.
Exactly, because you get a lot of that. You get a lot of talking about doing things.
And a lot of times when you're working on a hard project, sometimes the stuff you need is just simply tools and somebody to bounce ideas off of. And when everybody pours together their resources and just in terms of tools and stuff like that, everybody avails themselves for bouncing ideas off of, all of a sudden you notice that projects start to move forward.
So what inspired the idea were places like The Loft and the Hacker Halfway House, which unfortunately now is no more.
Everybody got out of jail, I guess.
But it was like Jen with the hooker and the crapping in the kitchen, and, you know, you remember the story. But anyway, history. But also places in Germany like the Chaos Computer Club, they have hacker spaces, and they're these huge... they have this nightclub, and then underneath this nightclub is this entire spiraling hacker lab. Yeah, hacker lair, I would call it. Mm-hmm. And it's got a woodworking shop, and it has a musical studio and a podcasting studio. Cool. And there's an entire computer lab with 36 computers inside of it. It's just this immense space funded by private membership, basically. Wow. And what these hacker spaces are aspiring to be are essentially community-driven community learning centers, but without the, you know, Byzantine corporate structure of trying to tell you what you should be learning while you're there, because that's your job to figure out what you're supposed to be learning.
Gentleman in the stylish Misfits T-shirt who's been waiting patiently for about 15 minutes now. Yes, you had a question.
Our school's been hacked several times by remote access. What exactly is remote access?
Oh my God, you're precious.
It's access from remote.
Yes. It's probably a stupid administrator having a stupid password and some idiot on RDP logging in and going...
Right, was that
remote access? That could mean dialing in, like remote access was a PBS software.
No, I'm sure it was like a primary domain controller with its RDP port flapping open in the internet.
Yeah, this basically someone not there got in.
With the administrator password of admin or blank or password
or 1 2 3 4 5.
That's the combination of my luggage.
Thank you.
I actually did a security audit on a Fortune 500 company that does like aerospace design, and like found that the system that they had, their big Oracle financial system that tracked all the spending for all of their like 40 subsidiaries and basically was the box that printed out their balance sheets, was attached to the internet.
Why?
No SSH, Telnet.
Woohoo.
With a root password of ABC123.
Oh, yeah.
1985 called, they want their protocol back.
I worked for a company once, his name I can't mention. It doesn't start with an I, though, so let's get that out of the way. And they assigned their initial passwords as change me. And one time I got a little adventurous and went through, this is when back when I didn't have shadow passwords, I went through and looked at, and something like 60% of the accounts were still change me.
Yeah.
Here's me not being shocked. Okay, I'm the same person.
Raise your hand if you work in an organization that really has, like, just horrible standards for passwords. Just passwords.
A Dilbert-like organization.
You'd be amazed.
We're doomed.
How many places can be owned by a single dictionary attack? Take a company. Take their domain name. Google for email addresses under that domain name. Take the username. Dictionary attack.
How many companies here work with PCs that have auto run still turned on? Brilliant.
How many people have seen their company's code appear in the daily WTF.com?
It should be the same number.
Oh, maybe you just haven't read.
I submitted it.
Oh, you submitted it? Yes, very good. Great, great. Anonymously, I hope, anonymized.
Don't turn towards the camera as you walk out.
I did a contract recently where I turned the guys locally on to the Daily WTF while I was doing the contract for them, and one of the guys said, we better not see any of our code show up here now because I'm reading it every day. Amazingly enough, it's the same company. Like 13 years later. That is weird. Okay. Anyway.
Let's go with that guy right there.
We have hands.
Yeah.
I actually don't do a lot of hacking, but I like reading up on the historical elements or the general theme. But I've noticed a lot of, I guess, books or anything that's collected has stopped back before in the 80s or early 90s.
Oh, I got this one.
That really covers what's happened in the last 18 years.
Chase
and I was
Scott.
Wondering if there's anything for someone who doesn't necessarily want to get into groups, well, don't mind getting into groups, but to pull that information, you know, keep up on the history of what's happened.
How far back do you want to go? I'm the archivist here. How far back do you want to go?
He knows everything from before you were born.
Give me a time frame.
I thought he was saying it's more contemporary stuff. I mean,
yeah. If you want to go back to the very earliest stuff,
it goes to model trains.
Yeah, you can. I would recommend.
Yeah.
There was a magazine that came out back in 1970.
He's talking about more after that point.
Frac?
Not previous.
Are you talking about frac?
Oh, after that point.
Oh, frac.
Oh, after frac.
Well, a lot of. A lot of it is. Yeah, a lot of it.
Well, after Sundown, we were all in jail.
Okay.
So.
That's where most of the stuff, if it's not, you know, about MakeNet or people trying to...
Oh, fuck MakeNet.
That's where most of the... Yeah.
Well, you know what I think a lot of
you know
it
he's
is?
Doing right now being
it's going to have to be a lot of time because...
Sorry, MakeNet. I love you.
Everybody here has a story that they can't tell. Everybody has a story
only
that
one?
They can't tell.
Only one?
Yeah,
Rattle,
yeah.
That was the most profound thing I've ever heard you say.
Yes.
So when it comes to like the recent history of hacking, I think it's going to be a case of like there's all kinds of dots that nobody's actually going to really be willing to or want to connect until it's like 20 years later, because everybody
past the statute of limitations.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Who can tell the story still has to be concerned with like, you know, how it's going to be perceived. There part in it. Like, I know one of the guys who was involved in the Los Alamos hack that they based War Games off of. And it's only been like the past 2 or 3 years that he's even been willing to talk about that. And that's just because, you know, certain things have like repercussions. Now, I think the recent history of hacking, also the open source community has gotten the focus. And rightfully so. I think they deserve a lot of it. But in terms of like, you know, the darker corners of it, I think we're just going to have to wait like, you know, statute of limitations periods until some people are actually going to be willing to tell most of the stories.
I'm going to disagree with that slightly. Apologies. I thought you were talking about the old stuff, not recent history. Yeah. Okay. Recent stuff. Which history? I mean, this has spread and become so ubiquitous. There's so many definitions for hacking, so many different groups nowadays. Are you talking about hacking open source stuff? Are you talking about hacking hardware and projects? Are you talking about evil bad guys who are doing criminal stuff online? Well, hell, just, you know, Google botnet or a Russian business
network.
I like what you're saying, because really what the problem is, it's really become narrowed. It's niched now. It used to be one group of, or one, a few core groups of people
doing
everything.
Yeah, when it first started off, you know, just very narrow. Now it's like the tree has exploded.
Well, it started as phone freakers, right? Which, and of that group, you could count on your hands, right?
Yeah,
and it's spiraled out to a huge community, and there's MySpace hackers and Oracle database hackers and the
iPhone hackers. Are
the
really
iPhone, exactly.
We're
the
in
iPhone
21st century. You know, it's global now. Everybody's got it to some extent in their life.
Yeah, once the consumer internet hit in 95, and I say the consumer internet because that was the point where, like, if you look at the curve of people on the internet, it just went.
When WWW,
and that was really the point where everything started to change.
Right,
and
we gave you bitches DNS.
You're going to have trouble finding history back prior to it, and there's no small number of reasons. One, the history was in fewer places, the places you'd talk about. Like there was a big transition between BBSs being the center of the online communication world to IRC being the center of the online communication world in terms of like the back and forth of things, and like that kind of thing has caused it to spread out. So like you used to be able to frame large periods in history in terms of talking about what was going on.
I'm going to interrupt you and say let's go into the detailed stuff from Tracking 201 because we've got 10 minutes left and let's take questions.
Okay.
Lots of questions. Short answers from us.
All right,
let's try it.
Very short words.
A zero-day exploit,
basically, 0 day is defined by the point it goes public. If it's 0 day, that means it's not public yet. It hasn't been disclosed in any of the major security forums, be it from a vendor patch or the bug track list or anything like that. That's the point where it's 0 day.
Right. So day one would be
you have it and nobody else has it.
Day one would be Microsoft says, "Hey, there's a DNS vulnerability in every DNS client that we've ever shipped in any in any workstation."
All right, we've answered that. We got it. This guy.
I was a programmer for. Years.
I'm sorry.
Programmer before that.
I'm really sorry.
So, went into computer security. Absolutely hated it. I realized I was headed down a track where I would just be paid to run BERT or something and exploit SQL injection on stupid websites. I didn't want to.
We call it easy money.
I want to go back and be a programmer. Convince me that I actually didn't give security enough of a chance as a career.
Yeah, security is tied more to operations than programming, really. In the business place, like if computer security is what gets you, or you're interested in computer security, but it's programming that you really like doing, then like there's very different paths from like if you like computer security and you actually like being on the edge and you like having to deal with the crises and you like having to deal with the problems. Can you tell what I like to do? Operations is the edge for that, because then you're framing your security stance not in the context of how do we prevent this stuff, but like things like continuity of operations and how do we deal with it when you know all the communications in Washington D.C.
It's really all about corporate process management
problems.
Okay.
So, all right, this guy here.
What do you guys think of the new move towards appliances for databases that have their web server and everything on?
It's still shitty code on shitty hardware.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Do you think that's a big risk to have everything on one box?
I can't wait.
Everybody
keep giving your money to Apple. It's the best idea ever.
It really depends on like what your enterprise looks like, because like if you're running a big computing enterprise and you have a bunch of little satellite offices that you need to put shit in, hell yeah, appliances, but not where you need flexibility.
Going to this hacking 101 idea, can you give us just some ideas, some examples of some very basic hacking projects that maybe some of you have done?
AI password guesser.
Okay, let me give you
using heuristics.
Okay, let me give you a real basic one because this applies to DragonCon. You notice the goggles I've got and everyone else is running around with.
They
them.
Do nothing.
Yeah, they do not. They do nothing. But thank you. I was waiting for someone to say that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, start playing around. Make your own goggles. There are lots of ways to fake brass if you don't want to make actual metals. Hell, you can get leads and stick them in various holes or even through the plastic here.
Okay,
and then just put batteries between the leads. I mean, it's real simple. That's the
base thing that you always want to do.
If you've never done it before, that's a very simple start.
When you're looking
then pick up Make Magazine.
I think it was, I can't remember who, but you find an itch and you scratch it. That's how you get involved in an interesting project. You find an itch, something that's bugging you or bugging you and a friend or ideally a few people, and you come up with a unique way to approach that problem. One, it's a challenge. challenge. Two, when you're done with it or you've gotten somewhere, it's improved your life. Three, there's always going to be other people that are interested in it. So, like, finding things like that. The other is, like, is something that's somehow just entertaining is always fun, like the goggles. I think one of the greatest examples we have Sunday night, the singing Tesla coil guys. That's cool. Not only did they build a Tesla coil, they figured out how to make it play music.
Yeah, but he's asking for someone who's new and just getting into
New and just getting into
project.
It. Yeah, you know, messing around with Linux is actually a really good place to start. Because
he was asking about hardware, not necessarily software.
Yeah, no, exactly, because, like...
Learn assembler.
You're figuring out... Well, no, wait. Hold on, let me...
I recommend the Motorola. It's the easiest assembler to learn.
One of the reasons why I say
not
just starting to mess
Intel
around...
Not that fucking Intel nonsense.
One of the reasons I say just starting to mess around with Linux is you will deal with hardware
selector problems,
and you will learn about how hardware and software talk
to
each
bitches.
Other, because you will have to deal with problems at one point or another. And the key thing is
basic
that
stamp,
there's
microcontrollers, those are fun to play with and learn with. They're very well documented.
Yeah, microcontrollers, that's actually really... FPGAs.
Robotics.
FPGAs,
yeah.
Using
start going
crypto
to
crackers.
You know, local 2600 meetings, local DEF CON meetings, local Linux users groups, and talk to people and see what they're working on.
Yeah,
and get people to show you how to do stuff.
If
Lego Mindstorms and robotics and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like
no, it's
stuff
true
going
that
on
you,
next door,
you can make the core job.
Go to the robotics track at some point. Right next door.
2600 BinRev. You'll find other people who want to work on projects. You'll learn shit. That's the important part.
Yeah, because the key thing
learn
about the self-education thread, I keep harping back on this, I think one of the central things that's key to hacking is the whole self-education. And by self-education,
Sharice,
I don't mean
up.
You sitting in a room reading or playing with stuff, because that's boring. That's why you have to be part of a larger community, so you have people to bounce ideas off of, and when you get stuck, you can just talk to somebody.
This guy over here.
Would you consider modding similar to hacking?
Yeah, totally. Why not? You mean like
especially
you know,
if you
like
learn something new
and stuff. Yeah, like it's I don't know, there's this fine line where the script kiddie line.
That was the answer. We kind of agree. Next question. We want to try to get as many as we can within the last couple minutes.
The answer is mostly yes.
Mostly. Yeah, just make sure there's a part of it
aliens
where you're thinking for yourself and not just following somebody.
Questions?
That is exactly...
That is hacking right there.
Right there. Yeah. Once you... When
making
you found,
shit do what it's not supposed to do. We call it a MacGyverism.
Yeah, when you found an unintended use, when you find an unintended use for something else that somebody came up with, yeah, that's
when
totally
you're soldering it. The paperclip to the EEPROM and in your head you're humming, dun-da-da, dun-da-da, you're a hacker.
Or when you realize that every web proxy that passes HTTPS all the way through has to have that wonderful connect command to connect to the outside world. And
you're a hacker.
And you can tunnel socks over
exactly.
And get the whole connection, yes.
I love you, by the way.
Okay. We'll leave it at that.
Semi-carnally.
No? Okay, never mind. Anyone else? Last question. No?
Can I trust DNF anytime soon?
No.
You've never been able to trust DNF. You
never trust anything.
Secure DNF. Like years from now, probably.
Oh, like DNSSEC and all that crap? Probably not.
The code name is in SAC.
Like, really, if you're...
What SAC do you trust? Not so much.
Thank you, folks.
Okay.
Donate to the beer fund if you want to drink tomorrow night at Hacking 201.
All right.
I found out something, though. I'm not a good public
Thank you.